love to watch the expression on people's face when they're told you don't have to fund your child's college education before your retirement, and they're like, oh, well, you know, says who, you know. So I think that takes a lot of pressure off of people.
When I retire, I don't want to be one of those people that still has to work at the age of 70. You know, I want to be able to retire and have money and be able to enjoy my grandchildren and enjoy life and have the money that we need, you know, from now on, every year, every month, for all of our expenses, and still be able to do and give to others.
Too many of us wait until we're in our 40s and 50s and then decide, hey, the kids are out of school, we got them through college, let's sit. Now let's start thinking about retirement.
We had an older single lady who was basically living on Social Security and had a lot of debt and was trying to figure out how she was going to make it.
How does one go into college without debt?
So, I mean, the whole thing is just mind-boggling. You know, I'm trying to work on my Roth IRAs right now.
We're partially there, but I want to get to that next step, get 3 to 6 months set aside, and then really start working on knocking out a good college plan for my children.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome nationally syndicated radio host and best-selling author, Dave Ramsey.
Very much. This is one of those lessons that I almost dread teaching because I'm not a technical, detailed, kind of boring money guy. I enjoy money. I like playing with it. I like having fun with it. I like setting people free from the bondage of debt. I like doing those things, but I'll tell you what, if you don't learn this lesson and you get out of debt and you're able to start investing, the government's going to take it all, called taxes. And we've got to learn to shelter this money from taxes. We have got to learn all of their tricks and trades, which means we have to learn all of their numbers and initials. And there's enough numbers and initials to fill a barrel coming out of Washington right now in the IRS regs. And so we've got to learn them. And there's no easy way to do that except to wade down into it and to do the details, do the diligence. And even guys like me who don't necessarily like details have to do the details and do the diligence to win, because that's what rich people do. Poor people blow past it and go, oh, well, somebody else will take care of it, dude, and they stay poor. You've got to do the details. Whether you're a detail person or not, it's a matter of diligence. So we're going to wade into this, and we're going to learn all the different things about all the kinds of retirement planning and college planning. So open to that lesson, please, and begin to fill in the blanks as we go along. You see, the problem is, and we've talked about this in several of our segments as we talk about goal setting, the problem is most people spend more time picking out a suit of clothes than they do their career, putting together their budget, laying out a game plan, or understanding their retirement plan. And so they end up going around blindfolded, wondering what happened. See, now there's a real good visual aid, but I messed up both my hairs. Now, once the emergency fund is in place, baby step one is what? Good. Baby step two, we're going to get out of debt, and we call that the? Good. Baby step three is?
3 to 6 months
of expenses for the fully funded emergency fund. Now, once that is done, and only when that is done, do we begin investing. Because if you do not have an emergency fund, and you have a 401k, and you have an emergency, you will use your 401k as an emergency fund. And when you bring $10,000 home, they will charge you a 10% penalty plus your tax rate. They will take about 40 cents of every dollar. In other words, $10,000 is going to turn into six. And then you're scratching your head and wondering why your financial plan isn't working. Because you got greedy and went to the investments before you did the protection, the insurance, and the rainy day fund. So you put that emergency fund in place first, or your retirement and your kids' college will become your emergency fund. Never forget, the emergency fund is first. But Dave, I get it, look, you'll get there. Chill. If you do things out of the wrong order, what ends up having to happen, it's like the old days when I was a little kid, we used to play Mother May I. Do any of you remember that? And if you take a step without permission, out of order, you have to take penalty steps backwards, right? And that's what happens in money. If you go start doing this 401k and don't have an emergency fund, you get penalized, because I can promise you, you become a Murphy magnet when you're walking around without an emergency fund and you're funding the 401k because David gives me a match. You're not sophisticated, you're out of order, you're not doing proper financial planning by anyone's assessment, okay? Anyone else that's telling you that does not know financial planning or counseling. Even the standard conventional financial planners who don't agree with me on a whole lot of anything agree with me on that one thing. Do the emergency fund first. Then we get to baby step four. Baby step four is there in your workbook. We're going to invest 15% of our household income into Roth IRAs and pre-tax retirement. Once the emergency fund is in place, you should begin retirement and college funding, which all fall within the long-term investing for wealth. Now, when we're doing baby step four, we and other baby steps later, like six and seven and those kinds of things, when we're doing college planning and wealth building once the home is paid off, we always want to take advantage of any kind of tax favored, where we get a tax break of some kind, investing that we can do. Tax favored investing. Now, we used to say pre-tax investing, and then the Roth IRAs came along, which allow tax-free, but they're not pre-tax. We'll talk about that. So anything that helps you with taxes is what you do before you do anything else. And I'm going to walk you through how to do a whole bunch of those. Basically, what we're saying is, if on purpose you don't decide to do something about this, you are going to choose. And you will either choose one of these, the IRA or the IRS, okay? It's not an option. By choosing one, you choose the, you automatically don't choose the other. By choosing, not choosing to choose, you have chosen. Hope I made that perfectly clear. Now, tax favored means that the investment is in some kind of a qualified plan. Qualified plan means it qualifies under the IRS guidelines for some kind of special tax treatment. Now, there are several qualified plans for retirement. There are individual retirement accounts called IRAs. There are simplified employee pension plans called SEPs for the self-employed. We'll talk about each of these in detail. There are, of course, 401ks. There are 403Bs and the deferred comp, the 457 plans. Now, everyone's heard of all these numbers, letters, licenses, and all these things. They're not a big deal. These are just sections of the IRS code. And so, for instance, if you want to learn how to do a corporate retirement program, you go to section 401, subsection K. Thus, we get the name 401k, all right? And so that's all these things are. Don't make them out to be some kind of mystery. They're not rocket science. This is not that tough to understand. We're going to walk through this, and I promise you, you're going to understand it. Now, first, let's look at the IRA. The IRA is not really an individual retirement account. The banks called it individual retirement accounts. The IRS says it's an individual retirement arrangement. Now, that does make a difference, okay? And so if you get publication 590 from the IRS, it will teach you about the individual retirement arrangements. Now, why does that matter? Again, let's remember our cookie jar as our investment. This is the investment. This is the mutual fund or something else. The banks wanted us to think the only way you could get the tax stuff was to open a bank account. All right? Actually, the individual retirement arrangement simply means the government will let you take a coat and keep some kind of an investment warm from taxes. All right? And so you can put a coat on it and keep the taxes out of it. That is an arrangement with the government that you can arrange around various kinds of investments. One is a bank account at a bank. Another is a mutual fund. You can have self-directed IRAs where you literally can buy real estate inside of your IRA or something like that. So the cookie jar could be a lot of different things, and what this is technically is a coat. An arrangement that keeps it warm from taxes. Does that make sense? Say yes.
Yes.
Good. Now, everyone with an earned income is eligible. You have to have an earned income except spouses who have a non-working spouse. Oh, that's a dangerous phrase. It's one of the dumbest things we say in North America, isn't it? We look at a young mother who has three toddlers at home and we say, "Do you work?" Okay. No, non-income producing is what we mean in the tax world, okay? Non-income producing. They have a segment that we'll talk about here in a second. But short of that, your child cannot do an IRA unless they have an earned income. An earned income. Now, the cool thing is, I knew this guy once who had a little toddler that did a diaper commercial. So Junior got like $7,000-$8,000 for doing this national diaper commercial. He was a baby model, you know? And so Junior had an earned income at 2 years old, 1 year old, whatever, could do, and they did IRAs with that earned income. But generally, you have to file a tax return, which they had to do, showing that you have an earned income with that child, then that child is eligible. So if you do not have an earned income, if you're on disability, you cannot do an IRA. If you're 100% on disability, you have to have an earned income equal to what you're going to put in. Each person with an earned income can have an IRA up to $3,000 a year or $5,000 a year, depending on which year you're viewing this in. When a spouse has no earned income, they are also allowed to do $3,000 to $5,000 more. So let's say that, as an example, in our home, Sharon's a full-time mom, okay, and has been since our children were born. So as long as I earn $6,000 in a year, we can do $3,000 for me, $3,000 for her in an IRA, even though she did not have a, quote, earned income. Married filing jointly, my income covered and bled over into hers the way it should be. Okay. For years, the tax code penalized moms for being at home, and they were not allowed to do but only $250 more. Nowadays, of course, you can do the whole thing, and that's the way it should be. Now, remember, the IRA is not a type of investment. Sometimes people confuse the IRA with the IRA is the coat. It's the arrangement. The investment itself is the cookie jar. It's not a type of investment. It is. It gets virtually... It's the way the investment is treated for taxes. Now, do not confuse IRAs with IDAs. IDAs are individual development accounts for folks in lower income settings typically, where the government will match them in that setting for money for buying a new home, money for starting a small business, or money for education. Those are IDAs, not IRAs. We've got all these initials running around in our culture, and we need to make sure we have this stuff really clear. Now, let's look at the Roth IRA, named after Senator William Roth, who put this into the Tax Relief Act of 1997 when the Roth IRA was born. Now, what the Roth IRA is an after-tax IRA. You do not get to deduct it from taxes, but it grows tax-free. Free. No taxes. This is a really big deal. This is a really huge deal. This is an unbelievable deal because most of the money we learned in compound interest that goes into an account over time is not money you put in. It's the growth of the money. Let's say that you save over a series of years in your 401k, which is after taxes, a series of dollars, and you have $4 million in there. We've shown you how you could do that, haven't we, over time with investments, okay, and with compound interest. Now, if you end up with $4 million in your IRA, in your Roth IRA, versus $4 million in your 401k. 401k, as you pull it out, you have to pay the taxes. Roth IRA, you don't pay taxes on. Now, taxes on $4 million are going to look suspiciously like $1 million. So that word Roth is worth $1 million. For those of you that are going to save aggressively and do like we teach and you end up with $4 million, that's $1 million word. Learn that word. Now, you cannot do a Roth IRA if you make $150,000 married filing jointly or more, okay? So you're not qualified if you're an upper income earner, but everyone else should do Roth IRAs. Why do the Roth IRA? Well, you should always do one like we teach, and you need to do them because you have better choices there. The Roth IRA gives you more choices. You have more things that you can do with it, more directions you can do. There's a lot of different games you can do. I don't suggest doing any of them, but you can actually pull out the money that you have put in, not the growth, but the money that you have put in as long as it's been open 5 years. So let's say we did $3,000 a year for 10 years. You'd have $30,000 in there. Let's say you had a $15,000 emergency fund and you ended up with a $30,000 emergency. you could pull some of the money you had put in the Roth out. Now, I would suggest that only as a worst-case bankruptcy avoidance scenario, okay? But you could pull that out without any penalty or any taxes because you already paid the taxes before it went in, as long as it's been open 5 years. The money that you put in, the principal. You have a higher bracket at retirement if you do what I teach, because you will have so much money coming out at retirement that is forced to come out of your IRAs and 401ks that you'll want the Roth to be tax-free because some of your other investments are going to have you in an upper tax bracket. Praise God, glory, hallelujah. I like that, right? You know, that's where you want to be. Now, you'll have more invested. Now, here's why. If you do a traditional IRA and you put in $3,000, that is a before-tax investment. In order to get $3,000 in the Roth IRA, you had to make more than $3,000 because it's an after-tax investment, right? So to get home with $3,000, we had to make what? $3,800, $3,700, something like that. So mathematically, it's as if you have invested $3,700 in there when you're doing the Roth IRA at $3,000. So you effectively, from an investment viewpoint, have put more in. And you have a lot more flexibility, a lot more things that you can do with the Roth IRA. We strongly suggest the Roth IRAs. And I'm going to give you an order of attack after I teach you about each of these. For those of you that are self-employed, the self-employed person can deduct up to 15% of their net profit on the business by investing in a SEP, a Simplified Employee Pension Plan. Now, there are some guidelines for that. But that is like a really big IRA. So if you made a net profit on your small business of $100,000, you are then able to invest tax-deductible, growing tax-deferred like a traditional IRA, $15,000 that year, and shelter it. So those of you that are self-employed that are looking for a way to get that money out of your income and put it into an investment and grow it, the Simplified Employee Pension Plan for the self-employed is the way to go. Then there's the 401k, the 403b, and the 457 plans. Most companies have completely done away with traditional pension plans, according to Forbes magazine. So these 401ks and 403bs, what they do is they give you a lot of choices. But there's a downside to these things. If you put nothing in your 401k, how much is in there?
Nothing.
Okay? Unlike the old pension plans where just for showing up and breathing, your company was setting aside money for you. Okay? Those days are gone. Now, the good thing about the 401ks and 403bs and 457s are that they are portable. What that means is when you leave, you take it with you. Before, with the pension plans, you had to be there a certain number of years and become vested before you had any ownership in that retirement plan, and then it was very limited. So you were really not building up a nest egg, and with today's world of change, as people are going through 14, 16, 18 jobs in their lifetime, they need investment programs that move with them when they move. And I'll teach you about when to do that and how to do that. The 401k, how many of you have a 401k available to you? Good. Okay, that means you work for a corporation of some kind, a company of some kind. A 403B is pretty much the same thing as a 401K with a few minor differences, but it's available in nonprofit organizations like churches. It's available in hospitals to you docs and nurses, and it's available in other settings like, as I said, the nonprofits, the churches, those. Oh, teachers. Teachers also have the 403Bs available to them. Okay? And it's slightly different. One thing about the 403B that's different, that's pretty cool, you cannot take your 401K and move it out to an IRA while you work with a company. You have to leave the company in order for that thing to be loosened. Okay? Your 403Bs, you can move them out of there into IRAs while you still work there. So some of you teachers who have lousy options, go set up an IRA and roll a bunch of your 403B out while you work there, and let's get some better mutual funds over in that IRA if you need to, and it's all still sheltered. Did that make sense? So you can move the 403B while you want. Now, 457 is a different animal. You cannot roll it around. It's stuck. That is the deferred comp plan. Usually in a government setting is where you find 457s, a government employee. Deferred comp means we are deferring, putting off our compensation. So all it is you just didn't take your paycheck now, so they didn't tax you on it. You just put it off, deferred the compensation, and you laid it over here in an investment so it'll grow. So it has the same effect of being a pre-tax investment, but there's some minute differences, okay? Because it technically is just deferred, put off income. Now, when you're looking at your 401k, 403b, or 457s, do not use the guaranteed investment contracts. These are GICs. These are basically a money market account. It's a lousy long-term investment. And when you look at the investment lesson, what you'll find is that you always have to make more than 6% on your money if you're investing longer than 5 years. Most of these money market type accounts will not make more than 5 or 6% on average. So you're just breaking even with taxes and inflation. You do not use money market type accounts in your long-term investing inside of these things. So stay away from the GICs. Well, I put some in there so that I was safe. You put some in your emergency fund so that you're safe. You put some into becoming debt-free so that you're safe. This is investing, and it is safe long-term if you leave it alone in good growth stock mutual funds. Now, you should be funding your plan whether your company matches or not. But the plans that have company matching provide great returns. But I'm amazed. If I take this $1,000 and I try to bring it home, it looks suspiciously like $700, doesn't it? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. And so it's amazing to me that if what the government is saying is that I can take $1,000 and I can bring it home or I can put it in pre-tax before they take the $300 out, okay? And yet I have people that come up to me and say, well, Dave, I'm not going to put money in my company's 401k because they don't match. That-a-way, punish them by you being broke. What's up with that? See, what the match is coming from Congress because it's kind of like I said, okay, here's $300. It was a pretend thing. Don't really do it, okay? Here's $300, okay? Take this and keep it through your whole life and earn as much interest with compound interest on it as you can. And then at retirement time, you have to give me the $300 back. That's what the government is saying by letting you use your tax money all of those years to grow with by doing pre-tax investing. So even if your company doesn't match, we're still going to want to look at those 401ks at some point in the process because we want to keep the government's hands off of it and make sure that you don't get messed up. So even if your company doesn't match, keep the government's hands off of this money. Now, rollovers, rolling over an IRA. You should always, see always is underlined, always roll over all retirement plans that you can out to an IRA when you leave the company. Never leave it in the old company. Never take your 401k to the new company and put it in the new 401k. Well, why? Well, here's why. They don't match it at the new company, so there's no benefit to moving it over there except that it's pre-tax. When you roll it out to an IRA, there is no taxes. You moved it from one coat to another coat. That's all you did. It never got cold. Okay? We just switched coats. All right? That's all a rollover is. And so you never paid any taxes, but your new 401k has 10 or 12 mutual funds to pick from. Your old 401k had 7 or 8 mutual funds to pick from, right? Something like that. So why would you not go into the open market and choose among 10,000 funds and have the flexibility to move it around later if I wanted to another IRA because I didn't like that fund later? Okay? When I put it in a 401k, I limit my choices. So anytime I can spring that money free of the 401k and move it out here into my IRA because the company got sold and changed names, that'll activate your 401k. How many of you have gone through a merger where your 401k, you had the option to move it out? You know what I'm talking about? A lot of mergers and consolidations going on, okay? So in that case, you can move your 401k out because you changed companies even though your desk never moved, okay? But if you actually move desks to another company, never take it with you because you limit your options. Always roll it to an IRA. And you want to do what's called a direct transfer. If you bring the money home and you say, all right, I left the company, send me the check. The company, when they send you your 401k money, is required to withhold 20% because the estimates are you're not going to reinvest that money within 60 days into an IRA. And if you don't, you have taxes on it of about 40%, and the government wants to make sure some of that was withheld. Okay? So if you have $10,000 and they send you the check, now you have $8,000. But you have 60 days to put $10,000 into an account to keep from being penalized. Only you've only got eight. So instead what you do is a direct transfer. Now a direct transfer is coat to coat. It's not coat to Dave to coat. Does that make sense? We're going to go directly from the 401k to the mutual fund covered with an IRA inside that coat. All right? And the way you do that is you go to the mutual fund people that you're dealing with and you write down, you say, okay, this is the mutual fund I want, and you fill out the paperwork and you buy the mutual fund, but you don't give them a check. You fill out another form called a direct transfer form. That form goes from the mutual fund company back to your 401k, tells them to send it straight over there. Don't send it home and then over there. Okay, because it'll cause you a cash flow bind, it'll cause you a mess. So a direct transfer rollover is what you always want to do. Now, you always want to do a Roth IRA and do a rollover to a Roth IRA so that it's growing tax-free if you meet these three things. And this is going to mean usually that you're later on in the baby steps. You're maybe baby step 5 or 6, things are going pretty good. Almost all the debt's gone, all the debt is gone except the house for sure at this point. And if you're going to roll to a Roth IRA, these are the three guidelines that make it where it makes sense. Number one, you will need to have saved over $700,000 by age 65. Now, that is not a law. That's some mathematics that I did. Basically, what that means is if there's $700,000 or more in your nest egg that's going to be coming out of other retirement plans or an IRA, that's going to throw you with mandatory withdrawals into a top tax bracket. In which case, the Roth IRA is always going to make sense because you're probably not in the top tax bracket now. All right? And so that $700,000, when you back out all the formulas, is going to make your annual income high enough that you're in the top tax bracket at that point. So if your nest egg is going to be $700,000 or greater at 70 years old, always roll to a Roth IRA if you meet these other two guidelines. Now, the other guidelines are that you need to be able to pay your taxes separately. If you take $10,000 and you roll it to a Roth IRA, the taxes become due. That's what we're talking about. Taxes, no penalties, on that $10,000 will be around a fourth, around $2,500. Okay? If you crack that nest egg open and take $2,500 out of it and pay the taxes, you left $7,500 in the Roth IRA. Now, if we had set that $2,500 aside and let it compound, it would have grown to enough to pay the taxes. So you just broke even if you crack the nest egg and take the money out. The advantage to rolling to the Roth is, if you take the whole $10,000, stick it into a Roth, and you come over here and pay your taxes, it's as if you have invested in another $2,500 or 25% into your retirement plan at that point, because that whole thing is going to grow tax-free, and we paid the taxes over here. That's when it starts to make sense. So if you can't pay the taxes without cracking the nest egg, don't do a Roth IRA rollover. You could roll it later, or you can even do a partial. Let's say you had $100,000 and you didn't have an extra $25,000 over here to pay your taxes. You could move 50 one year, 10 another year, 8 another year, as you could pay the taxes separately. You're allowed to break your IRAs up and move them around into several different places. IRAs can be broken into lots of little pieces. Also understand you cannot do a Roth rollover by law if you have a household income the year you're doing the rollover of over $100,000. Now, you understand all taxes become due on the rollover amount anytime you're rolling to a Roth IRA, because that's the one that grows tax-free. But even if you can't pay taxes, at least roll to a regular IRA because there's no taxes due and you've got all the choices. Is that clear as mud?
Yes.
Good. Okay, good. Now, never, ever, ever borrow on your retirement account, no matter what. Why? Because we don't borrow, number one. But number two, let's talk through borrowing on a 401k. If you have a 401k, most places give you the option to borrow on it. Really dumb idea for three basic reasons. Never borrow for three basic reasons. Number one, it sounds smart in the Money Magazine article that you read. If you unplug your 401k and pay yourself back the interest. If I borrow $10,000 on my 401k, then I'm paying back 6 or 7% interest or 5% interest, and the interest goes back to me. So it sounds wise. Well, instead of paying interest to someone else, I'm paying myself interest. Isn't that wise? Well, not really, because you unplugged a 14 or a 15% mutual fund in order to pay yourself 6. This doesn't make sense mathematically, and when you compound that out over time, that's a huge mistake. Number two problem with borrowing on your 401k is you might find a better job, or they might give you the opportunity to look for another job. right? Meaning you leave the company. If you leave the company because of a job change situation, that loan is due in full, lump sum, within 60 days, or it's considered by the IRS an early withdrawal, and they're going to charge you all the penalties and interest and everything on it. Now, let me tell you, when you do not need a big tax bill, is at a time of unemployment. It's like a double dip on Murphy, right? Think through this. That's exactly the wrong time to have a loan come due that's going to cost you 40%. So you take a $20,000 or a $30,000 401k loan, we're talking about $8,000, $10,000, $12,000 in taxes and penalties here that you're going to have to come up with on the very year that you've had a bad year because you got laid off. Never borrow on your 401k. The third reason is if you die, you are also deemed to have left the company. And once you left the company feet first, you also have the same problem. Well, you don't. Your spouse does, or whoever you left this thing to. And they have to be able to pay the loan back within 60 days of your death. So you're either going to use up some life insurance money or create a huge mess financially for these people who were left behind. Because a spouse can take an IRA without any tax implications. A spouse can take a 401k without any tax implications upon death of the other one. All right, but they can't unless they repay the loan in this situation. And boy, that is the last time a widow needs to be figuring this stuff out. A widower needs to be figuring this stuff out is within 60 days of losing the one that they love the most on this planet. So there you go. Don't do that. Now, if you're a federal government worker, you have the standard thrift plan available to you. It is a fabulous plan, by the way, for those of you that are federal workers. I've done extensive research on this, and I want you to put 40% of your money in the C fund, 40% of your money in the S fund, and 20% of your money in the I fund. Now, when we do the mutual fund lesson, we tell you to put money across four types of mutual funds: growth and income, growth, aggressive growth, and international. Aggressive growth is also called a small cap because it's what size companies?
Small.
Right. Growth is also called a general stock fund. It's kind of in the middle. International is called international because the companies are where? All right. Now, C plan is the common stock plan. It has been available in the thrift plan the longest and has averaged about 17% over the last 9 or 10 years. It's an excellent little mutual fund. It is modeled off of the S&P 500 index, so it's a real stable type growth fund. So I would put 40% in that. The S fund stands for small companies. That would make this an aggressive growth fund. Now, it's modeled after the Barclays Extended Market Index, which is just a fancy way of saying a whole lot of the small company funds are indexed out, and this is a good stable average of that. It has averaged about 14% in the last 10 years, 7 years, 8 years, that kind of a thing. So look at the S fund. So you've got some in common stock, kind of calm, some in the S fund, that aggressive side, that's an aggressive growth fund, and then we're going to put a little bit over in international, 20%, because it's not done that great. It's only made 8 or 9% in the last 10 years or so, and the I fund is the Barclays EAFE index. Stands for Europe, Australia, and Far East. So where are those companies that they're buying stocks in? Europe, Australia, and the Far East. So it's a true international fund, but it's not performed that well at around 8 or 9%. So we're going to put a little in there just to be diversified, and diversification means to
spread
out, right? And so when we've got our money spread across all these different types, then as a federal government employee, you're going to be in good shape. Now, baby step four is put 15% of your income into retirement, right? Right, good. Now, how do we do that, Dave? Where do we start? Well, we suggest that if your 401k or 403b matches, that you take the amount up to the match. The very first thing you want to do is you're getting your 15%. So if your company matches 1-for-1, they give 100% match for 6%, then you take that whole 6%, right? Because that, let me tell you, if the mutual fund makes no money, you still doubled your money that year. You had 100% rate of return. That's tough to beat, okay? You're right? You see what I'm saying? So you always take that match. That match is sweet. And then once you get to the match, then I want you to go do all you can do in Roth IRAs. The next step is all you can do in Roth IRAs. And if that doesn't take you up to 15%, then we'll return back to the 401k and do some more. So the total of all your investing between your 401ks and your Roth, add it all up, divide it by your income, and it needs to be about 15% of your income, maximum. And not 10%, not 8%. Well, what about the match? The match is gravy. Don't worry about that. Money you are putting in. So if you make $40,000 a year, you need to be putting in $6,000, $500 a month, somehow across all these plans. I suggest first take the match, then do a Roth. If that doesn't eat it up and you need to do more, go back to the 401k. But the Roths have big enough limits in most of your households, you can probably finish it off in the Roth. Now, if your company does not match, and it's just at all, in no way, then just do Roths. Start with the Roth IRA and do all you can do there. If the Roth IRA does not get you up to 15% of your income, then go over to your 401k or 403b and do some over there. The reason is that without the match, the 401k is not as good as the Roth because the Roth grows tax
free.
Okay, and again, we end up with a $4 million in a 401k or $4 million in a Roth IRA. The $4 million in the Roth IRA is $4 million. The $4 million in the 401k after taxes is $3 million. So if we got to choose, we'll take that one, right? But with a match, the 401k makes sense. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, good. This is a barrel of fish hooks, but we got to get through it, okay? Now, the best plan is if you end up with $700,000 or more by age 65 is to do the Roth IRA all you can. Now, you military people, listen to me carefully. You need to be investing in these Roth IRAs big time. I know you're counting on your military retirement. I know that's a big plan the government has pitched you, and I think it'll be there. I think we'll honor our military. I certainly hope we do. I think they're going to continue to do right there by those plans. The deal is, though, you do have an ETS, an estimated time of separation. Someday you may not be military, and you need to have some money at that point. It would be a good thing. Ask anyone who has left the military. Money is a good thing to have as you leave the military. So when you know, begin to do your estimated time of separation and those kinds of things, you'll be glad to look over there and say, hey, I've been doing Roth IRAs. And you certainly qualify as a military person to be doing that. Number three is complete 15% of your income by going to company plans or SEPs at that point. Now, let's begin to dream for a second. I want you to think with me and look at this. This is an amazing idea. Let's take a typical American couple. Let's say a 30-year-old couple in here. Better than that, let's take a 26 or 27-year-old couple in here. Who in here is 26 or 27 years old as an example? Bunch of you. Good. Okay. Let's take these guys as an example for just a second. Let's say at 26 or 27 they got it and they did baby step one, which is? Good. They could do that pretty quick, couldn't they? Like right now? Do it fast? Okay. Baby step two, they're going to knock out all their debts but their house using the debt
snowball.
Good. Then baby step three, they're going to finish their emergency fund, a full 3 to 6 months of expenses. They're sitting there with no payments and $10,000 or $15,000 just for emergencies. Life is pretty good on the planet. And now they're 30. It's taken them 2 or 3 years to get there. Wouldn't that be pretty cool? Okay, because this stuff doesn't happen fast. I don't sell microwaves. I sell crock pots. Okay, this takes a little while. All right, now, if we were to do that, and they started at age 30, and they do a $3,000 IRA, Roth IRA, each per year from age 30 to age 70, that is $500 a month, that is $6 million, 5.8, we'll round up. $6 million tax
free.
Whoa. I mean, think about this for a minute. What if I'm half wrong? This works. Now, let's play with this for just a second. If we were to invest at 12% at that point, like a decent series of mutual funds at age 70, all right? And we know that inflation has averaged about 4%. If we were making 12% and we'd not only not touch the principal, don't touch the goose that's laying the golden eggs, not only don't touch that, but we're going to leave 4% in there so every year we get a cost of living raise, okay? So that the principal is not eroded by inflation. Does that make sense? So if we're making 12 and we leave 4 in there, how much can we pull off? 8 times 6 is? 48. That's $480,000 a year tax-free income. $40,000 a month. Do you understand that these people, on average, are making $40,000 a year now? And now they're going to retire on that a month, tax-free. And have a cost of living raise every year and leave $6 million to some kid somewhere, bless their heart. Is this pretty cool or what? Let's play pretend for a second. Let's play pretend and say that same couple in here instead just did their 401k. They took a $40,000 income. They put 15% of their income in their 401k. 15% is $6,000 a year. $500 a month. They do the same thing, and at age 70 in their 401k, they'll have $5.86 million. Now, they'd have only $40,000 a month income taxable now. Oh, darn. I mean, think about this. This is pretty incredible. But what if we could really stretch them and get them to do both? And they did $1,000 a month savings. They funded their Roth IRAs at $3,000 a year each. Now, let me tell you, and then they save 15% of their average household income. And let me tell you, these two losers at this point, and we know they're losers. Here's how we know they're losers, okay? They started at an average income at age 30, and by age 70, they had never gotten a raise. So these couple of losers that save $1,000 a month and never got a raise end up with $11 million, $12 million. Do you know what you do if you have $12 million? Anything you want. I mean, is this incredible? Think about it. Do you realize your monthly income is $100,000 a month and you get a cost of living raise every year and you never touch the principal? Now let's think about it. $100,000 a month income. I mean, after about 62 days, you bought all the stuff you could ever want. Now what are you going to do? Now you're going to spend the rest of your life giving aggressively and making sure your kids don't spoil their life because you have flat changed your family tree. You have flat set a legacy. And you know what I get when I show people this? I see their heads start to drop and they say, Dave, you can't save $1,000 a month on a $40,000 income. And you know what? That's the truth. If you're normal. And what makes you weird? Think with me for a second. Honestly, think through the math. If you had a $40,000 a year annual income at 30 years old and you didn't have any payments, no car payment, no car fleece, you didn't have any credit card payments, no student loans, and well, somewhere right in there we're going to get this house paid off, aren't we? No house payment. Now, if you make $40,000 a year and don't have any payments, could you save $1,000 a month? Yes or no?
Yes.
For real, you could. Now, you look at me in the face and tell me that Proverbs 22:7 is anything but the truth and applies to you today. The borrower is slave to the lender. This is costing you big time. When you look at the payments you're paying out, it is destroying your legacy. Look at the math on this. If this doesn't make you just a little bit angry, just a little bit passionate, you have no blood in your veins. Think. But when I show this to big audiences across America, I can watch their body language as they slump in the chair and their heads go down because their hope has been stolen and they truly honestly believe deep down inside they will always have a car payment. They will always have a house payment. And so they can't grab hold of this. They think this is hype. And all it is Proverbs says it well, hope deferred makes the heart sick. The rest of that proverb answers the question though. When desire comes, it is the tree of life. See, slavery is a mentality and I'm here to break it. I'm done with it. There is no way you need to live like that. You need to live where all the money comes in and all the money goes out to the bank. This is your destiny. This is the way you ought to be acting as free Americans. This is the way you ought to be seeing things. But you got to be able to see past the debt to get here. I promise you, it's worth it. Let's look at college planning. Boy, there is some fabulous stuff available for college funding today. You save for college first, and for most of you, it's all you'll need to do in the education IRAs. They're education savings accounts, ESAs. Now, you are allowed to put $2,000 a year into an education savings account that grows for college tax-free. Now, we suggest a mutual fund, and let's put for our college fund a new kind of coat over the mutual fund called an education savings account, and it lets these cookies stay warm. They grow all the way for free. For free. Now, if you start with a baby at 18 years old and you put $2,000 a year in, that's a lot. At 12%, they will have $126,000 in that account. Now, why is that important? Well, because you only put in $36,000. 18 years times $2,000. You with me? $36,000 is what you put in. $126,000 of that is tax-free. The tax-free is a big deal. What we're saying here is, in that scenario, this is a $90,000 jacket. You with me? It made this money grow tax-free for college. Now, the estimates across the U.S. for a state school, including in-tuition or in-state tuition and on-campus boarding and the meal card, okay, the minimum plan. We're not talking gourmet food and driving a Beamer off to college, all right? We're talking get by and get through school are going to be, for a baby born sometime around now, they're going to need $50,000 to $60,000 at most places to pull that off. They don't need $126,000, okay? So, in other words, what we're saying is $63,000 is half of $126,000, half of $2,000 is $1,000. So you probably, if you started today with your baby, a brand new baby, could save at $1,000 a year, $83 a month, enough to save up and put that child through college without any bells and whistles. Now, if you want to send them to an Ivy League or something, you better be on that $2,000 schedule, but it's tax-free. Now, there are income limits to this, and if you don't meet the income limits, meaning you make too much to qualify for this, or you even want to do more for your children, let's show how we can do that and still have some tax-free growth or tax-deferred growth or tax-treated growth. Above the educational savings account, or if you're over those income limits, you need to invest for college using good growth stock mutual funds. In either case, let's use those, but in this case, we're going to put them in an UTMA or UGMA. Stands for Uniform Transfer to Minors Act. All that means is we're opening a mutual fund now in the child's name. We're opening the account. The account is listed in the child's name. That's all we're doing. And then a custodian is named, and usually the custodian would be the parent or the grandparent or whoever opened the account, something like that. It has to be an adult in order to be a custodian, okay? So a custodian is named. You're in control of the money until they're 18 or 21 years old, depending on whether it's an UTMA or an UGMA. But again, all those initials mean is you just open a mutual fund in the kid's name. Now, my kids have UTMAs right now, all right, because we don't meet those income guidelines. So that's the only way we have to save for them, for this college. Now, what that does is that money is theirs. It is not necessarily legally earmarked for college the way the ESA is. So if you can do an ESA, that money has to be used for college or there's huge penalties. They can't run off and go buy a car or something. But technically, the UTMA is their money, and at 21, it's theirs, technically speaking. I say technically speaking because if one of mine is doing drugs, they're going to have a hard time finding it. All right? But technically speaking, it is their money. That's how it works. All right, so let the beatings begin. Now, many states now offer a thing called a 529 plan. It's something you could look at also if you have an income that doesn't meet the ESA. I'm telling you, 90% of you, 95% of you, do the educational savings accounts, and that's going to take care of your kids' college. Okay? This is for folks that don't meet the income limits or that want to do even something a little fancier or that have big asset bases and want to do some estate planning of sorts. The 529 plans allow the funds to grow tax-free for college. Now, there's two types of 529s. One is called a static plan that allows you to freeze your investment into certain mutual funds. And the 529 has very little flexibility. You go to a state and you can buy in another state. For instance, if you live in Kentucky, you could buy in New Hampshire. If you live in New Hampshire, you could buy in Tennessee, okay? Because those are states that offer 529s to people outside the state. And that money can be used for education in any state. So they got some flexibility that way. But once you buy it, you are pretty much locked in with that plan, all right? So you better like it. So I like, for that reason, what are called the static plans, where you look at the investments that they have, the mutual funds that they have in there, and you like those, and boom, I make a commitment to that. I look at their long track record, and I feel good about it. For instance, I'll give you an example. The Fidelity family of mutual funds has New Hampshire, Massachusetts, and Delaware's plans that they manage. They have a static portfolio of Fidelity plans. I did a little research on that, kind of liked it. Their 10-year average on that static set of about 10 mutual funds in there that you automatically go into if you go into one of those states and do the frozen plan has averaged over 10 years a little under 14%. That's a pretty decent average in mutual funds. I'm willing to lock in on that, okay? That one's okay. The other type of plan is the age-based 529, where they move your investments around and they get more conservative as the child approaches college. And what they do there is they tend to get hyper-conservative because they don't want anybody angry. A little too conservative for me, to the point that by the time the child's 18, they're almost all in money markets and almost all in bonds. And I don't want my money there because the rates of return for long-term investing are not what I want to see there in the portfolio. So I think these things have a low rate of return on the age-based 529s, and I don't recommend those. But again, the ESA, the Educational Savings Account, will pretty well take care of you for anything you need at that point for all of your college, for most of you. Now let's look at the nevers of college funding. The nevers of college funding. Number one, never save for college using life insurance. The Gerber Baby Plan. Gerber Baby Food sells life insurance that's a little miniature whole life insurance policy that has a lousy 2% rate of return on it. Anytime you're buying insurance that has an investment in it, you are getting ripped off. Never use insurance as an investment for anything, and that includes college. Another one of the nevers of saving for college is don't use savings bonds. Tons of you have bought savings bonds for college. It's not evil. At least you're doing something. Most people aren't doing anything. But look at this. You're making 5 to 6% on your money. That's a lousy rate of return when 96% of the growth stock mutual funds have averaged over 12% in the last 15 years, according to Lipper Analytical. So mutual funds are stable for long-term investments. And let's say the mutual funds did horrible. They did horrible, and they didn't make 12. They did half of what they've averaged for 70 years. Half! They're still down to your savings bonds. Okay, and if you remember the compound interest lesson in savings, the one that you opened up this series with, you remember these interest rates are important, don't you? 6 to 12 is not double, is it? It's a whole lot more than double. Do you remember that? Say yes.
Yes.
Okay, so this savings bond idea is a bad idea. It was a noble approach. And for you sweet little grannies that have been doing that, quit doing it. Set up an account, an ESA, an educational savings account, and start shoveling that $50 birthday money into there, okay? Instead of shoveling, oh, I've got a savings bond. My granny always sent us savings bonds. And it was sweet. That was nice. She came from the era when you used to buy savings bond because, well, we believed at that point the government was worth supporting, right? Now we don't want to really support this idea, some of these ideas they've got going up there, by buying government bonds. It came from that war bond mentality from World War II, okay? So she bought a bond and would send a $50 bond to our kids, and you can cash them out after 6 months. You have to wait 6 months, and then we would cash them out, stick them in the mutual funds, and she would ask us, how are those bonds doing? We're going, great, grandmother, great, because now they're in a mutual fund. Never save for college using zero coupon bonds. Some of these little financial magazines write these little cutesy articles about zero coupon bonds. Lousy rate of return. They grow tax deferred because you buy here and it matures and you sell here. So effectively, you're not paying taxes until you pull it out. But again, it's a lousy rate of return. So what if you win a little bit of a tax game? Again, none of this even comes close to a good mutual fund with an educational savings account. And the last one is never use prepaid college tuition. Anytime you prepay something, your rate of return, your interest, is only what it goes up from the time you prepay it until you need it. So if you prepay college, your interest return on your investment is what the inflation rate of tuition is. Tuition nationally for the last 25 years has averaged inflation of around 7%. So when you do prepaid college tuition programs, you're making 7% on your money. When you could have made 12 in a good mutual fund tax free in the ESA, in the educational savings account. So that by far is the best route to go. Now there are several worksheets throughout your lesson here that you'll want to get and do on the side. They'll help you calculate your monthly amount. There are some tables and some financial factors in there. If you don't have a financial calculator, you'll be able to back into and figure out what you need to be saving for college. Back into and figure out what you need to be saving for retirement. Get you some simple, basic, easy-to-use software. It'll do the same thing. Or an inexpensive financial calculator. $20, you can get one that'll calculate payments and what things become later. If you want to play with some of these future values of what things grow to a little bit. You nerds will like those ideas. The free spirits will just observe your detailed work later, okay? So the idea is this. Baby step one is? Good. Two is? Good. Three is? 3 to 6 months of expenses. Now we're at four. We've got the emergency fund, $10,000 or $15,000. We have no payments but the house. We're going to do retirement and college planning. 15% in, we're going to use matches from 401ks and 403bs first, and then go to Roth IRAs if you qualify income-wise, and then go back to the 401k. If you do not have a match, we're going to do Roth IRAs first and go to the 401k only after we've gotten to 15% of income. Then when we go over here to college, that is baby step five. We're going to start doing the college at that point. The best thing you can do by far for almost all of you, if you meet the income guidelines, you don't make way too much money to do it, then you need to do the educational savings account, which grows completely tax-free. Now, I've given you a bunch of other information because I want you to leave here with something called knowledge. And in our culture, knowledge is power. When you start to understand these things, you start to see these things, you start to realize that it could happen to you, you become something that these companies are scared to death of, and aware, and armed, and educated, and a consumer with attitude. You are ready to attack. You're ready to win. Are you starting to see how you really could change your family tree? You really could leave a legacy? It starts way back there with getting out of debt, doesn't it? It comes up here, and we're going to keep the government's hands off of our money as we save it and grow it, and we are going to win this thing. It is doable. There is no excuse in this culture. When I throw up $11 million over here, how many of us would feel pretty good about a tenth of that? You know? Really? So if we didn't do but $100 a month, we go way back there, right? This is doable. I don't care whether you make $25,000 a year or whether you make $250,000 a year. There is no excuse for retiring on social insecurity in this culture. You've got to change your look at this thing. Your pizza and cable money can change your life, but you've got to get control of it. It'll change your family tree, and it'll change your destiny, and you will have done it. Thanks.
Every one of us have made financial mistakes.
If I had known those principles 6 years ago, I could save myself a whole lot of heartache, I think.
Because the biggest benefit of having the small group environment is to share experiences and stories so that we can learn and grow.
I think the most positive thing is to see that hope, that real hope. They really understand. They know that it's within their grasp to have enough at retirement to help their kids in college, to have anything they want, you know, and not have to sacrifice.
Our girls have college funds set up, so when they get there, we're not going to be having to scramble or dip into investments or other things to get take care of that. That'll be done for them.
But you know, if you're in your 20s and you start putting away even $50 a month, because of, as Dave preaches, compounding, by the time you're ready to retire, is a tremendous nest egg.
When you can get that off your shoulders, you're living life a lot better.
Credit cards reek.